Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Everything seems to be game in Washington again this season. Opponents of Obamacare are in full battle formation on Capitol Hill. The stakes are careers, government shutdown, and more. The politics are wild. We're going to get inside all of that this hour on Point, inside the shutdown battle and the stakes in Washington. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What are you telling your representative in Congress, your senator? What do you see at stake here? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. We have a super plugged-in panel with us today. From Washington, Amy Walter joins us, national editor of the Cook Political Report. Amy, great to have you here.
Thanks, Tom. Glad to be here.
From South Bend, Indiana, Robert Costa, Washington editor of the Conservative National Review and contributor to CNBC. Robert Costa, Bob, welcome back to On Point.
Hey, great to be here, Tom.
And from Washington, E.J. Dion, columnist for The Washington Post, professor of government at Georgetown University, and weekly liberal voice paired with David Brooks on NPR's All Things Considered. E.J., wonderful to have you back. Thanks for joining us.
Great to be here and a privilege to be with Amy and Robert.
Yeah, good panel. Amy, take us in. As we speak right now, what is the state of play? It changes by the day, we've seen that. But where does this stand? Are we on track for a showdown? What's the state of play, Amy?
Well, it seems that the state of play, as you're right, it is in flux, but it looks as if we are getting closer and closer to actually averting a shutdown. Leadership, Republican leadership in the Senate, conceding yesterday that they don't have the votes for a filibuster. They're going to let the votes go forward in the Senate, which means that the measure to strip Obamacare, defund Obamacare that's been added to this bill to keep funding the government will not be in the final version of the bill. It will pass the Senate with Democratic votes and will go to the House. There will probably still be a fight over how many Republicans will actually vote for this bill, how many Democrats are going to be on board with this. But at the end of the day, it looks like we are going to avoid – this is – my feeling as of today, avoid a government shutdown. But that does not mean that we do not come up against another crisis. In fact, the next battle is going to be on the debt ceiling, and that one is likely to be, number one, even more contentious, and number two, could be more problematic, especially for the economy.
Bob Costa, was there ever a chance in the Senate that Mitch McConnell would go along with Ted Cruz, who has been beating the drum for this defunding all summer long, join him in an effort in the Senate to filibuster, giving a clean continuing resolution back to the House? Was there ever a chance that he could pull together a sufficient Senate majority to actually change this and send something back to the House that his comrades there would welcome?
It's a great question. Was there ever a chance? I think there was always a narrow window for Leader McConnell to maybe jump into the shutdown caucus and rally with Ted Cruz. He's running in a difficult primary in Kentucky next year against a Tea Party favorite named Matt Bevin. It looks like McConnell's going to probably win that primary. So he's not under too much pressure, though, to really cave automatically. But I was always skeptical that McConnell would actually join with Cruz. He's not personal friends with Cruz. He's not really political allies with Cruz. And McConnell does not like more than anything to be dictated to. And I think McConnell and Boehner always had a strategy to use the debt limit, not the continuing resolution, as their preferred battleground. And so I think McConnell had to play along and rally publicly with the defund crowd, but strategically he was never going to really go along.
Bob Costa, you know the House situation well. What happens when and if the Senate sends back a funding bill that the House defunded Obama in its Obamacare in its vote? Now, the Senate's going to send it back with funding for everything, including the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare.
What happens at that point? Does the hardcore Republican opposition to this health reform stand down? How does John Boehner handle this?
You know, it's a fascinating dynamic right now in the House. Boehner, Cantor, and many even conservative Republicans felt bullied by Cruz and Mike Lee from the Senate, telling them how to run the House, how to handle Obamacare as the fiscal drama unfolded. And you could see last week when they passed their own version of the CR that defunded Obamacare, mm-hmm. they immediately held a press conference, political circus inside the Capitol, saying it's the Senate's responsibility, it's the Senate's responsibility. So that's really a chess move by Boehner and others to make sure the blame is on Cruz and his allies in the Senate should this defund effort fizzle. And I think Boehner wants to pass a clean CR or something akin to it and just move on to another fight.
Do you think that the staunch opponents of this, who the Tea Party have brought into office, many of them in opposition to Obamacare, that's what they ran on, who Ted Cruz has rallied over the summer, are they prepared to now fold their tent and line up behind Speaker Boehner and just say, okay, here's the funding?
Some are. You saw some like Sean Duffy from Wisconsin and Peter King from New York, some of the more establishment Republicans. They're with Boehner on this, but you bring up a very valid argument, and that's that the conservative movement, especially in this vacuum of power in the post-Romney era where there's no national nominee, chairman of the party is not a strong figure, it's allowed the conservative movement figures, the Tea Party favorites, to really dominate the discourse within the party. And so Boehner and Cantor have to compete, in a sense, with the right every day for their own strategy and the narrative of the party. And so you have a lot of conservative groups out there, the Senate Conservatives Fund, Freedom Works, Club for Growth, Brent Bozell's For America, all day, every day, saying the Speaker and McConnell should never cave and should fight. And this is unrealistic expectations on the right for what they can achieve in divided government. But the pressure is there, and you see every day on talk radio and Fox News, there's an incessant clamor among conservatives to just fight, even if the expectations are already known.
E.J. Dionne, big impasses like this serve as kind of x-rays. We see all kinds of detail that may be obscured in ordinary days and weeks. What have you learned in the last 10 days here, EJ, about the Republicans and their ranks, about Democrats in the midst of this struggle, maybe crisis, EJ?
Well, I think Democrats are enjoying following Napoleon's axiom, just lay back while your opponents are destroying each other. I mean, I think Bob got at something important. Senator Ted Cruz should win some kind of brotherhood award because he has brought people together across peculiar lines, both inside the Republican Party and between Republicans and Democrats, in saying essentially that House members should put their bodies across the tracks to serve the cause he is supposedly fighting for in the Senate, but knows he can't win, has just gone down very badly, not only among moderates in the House, but among a lot of conservatives in the House who say, wait a minute, he's revving everybody up, but we're the ones who are being asked to pay the price. And I think very slowly it's dawning on people just how radical this demand for repeal Obamacare, or we will shut down the government, or we will risk default on the debt, how radical that demand really is. When you see the Wall Street Journal editorial page criticizing Ted Cruz and the right wing on this, you know that this is way out of the mainstream. We had an election. The president campaigned on Obamacare and won. The Democrats held the Senate, and Republicans held the House, but actually lost the popular vote in the House. There's no mandate for repeal of the Affordable Care Act. And what I think may be happening, and this is why I agree with Amy that as of right now, I think the odds are we'll avert a shutdown and then fight on the debt ceiling, is that there are some forces in the Republican Party saying, wait a minute, we've let Freedom Works and the Club for Growth get out of hand. We've let this Tea Party tendency get out of hand, and it really hurts us. Nothing has done more good for President Obama in the last week, who was having a lot of trouble just even a week ago, than this Republican fight. And I think there are a lot of conservatives who are saying, we got to get out of this and fight on better ground.
Amy, are you sure that if the Senate sends this back to the House with funding for the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare in it, that the House won't turn around and send it back with somehow stripping it out again?
Okay, so you're right. We can never be sure of anything in this town. And the one thing that gives folks who I've been talking to who've been on the Hill for a long time a little bit of hope that this thing doesn't turn into an absolute shutdown, mm-hmm. is that the leadership is actually talking to the White House leadership, between the Republican leadership in the House and Senate, speaking with each other. So they have a better sense of what's going on within their conference, quite frankly, than we do,
sure.
and what they're willing to vote for. And I think that's been the strategy all along here, which is give those folks who wanted to have a debate about Obamacare on this continuing resolution the chance to have that fight. Get a vote on it. Everybody was able to take their vote, make their case. They send it to the Senate. It's defeated. Okay, we lost this round, guys. It's okay, but we move on to the next day. The thing that I'm somewhat amazed at, and maybe we'll see this as we move forward, mm-hmm. but what Republicans have not been able to do as effectively as they should, and this happened with the last debt ceiling fight, is to claim victory for the things they've actually succeeded in getting Democrats and the president to agree to, which is a continuing resolution that includes really deep budget cuts, that includes the sequester.
Yeah.
So this is the thing that Republicans, yes, they came to Washington in 2010 to shut down Obamacare, but really they came to Washington to stop government spending, really. That was their number one concern.
So maybe they're winning, and even as they perhaps lose here.
Exactly. They're winning on that fight, and to focus the energy on the we're cutting spending. Let's get to Obamacare later on.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the politics of the shutdown threat right now in Washington, everything on the line, with 1 week to go. And we're looking at what's driving this drama. E.J. Dionne is with us from The Washington Post. Amy Walter from the Cook Political Report. Robert Costa from National Review. A little sound of what we've been hearing out of Washington. This was last Wednesday on Fox News. Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz said his Republican allies, including Senator Mike Lee from Utah, would continue to push for defunding the Affordable Care Act.
Mike and I are going to fight with every breath in our body. As Churchill said, we will fight on the beaches, we will fight on the streets, we will fight at every step to stop the biggest job killer in America.
Fight him on the beaches, quoting Churchill there on Sunday on CNN's State of the Union. House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi went after Tea Party Republicans for threatening to shut down the government.
For many of them, I call them legislative arsonists. They're there to burn down what we should be building up in terms of investments in education and scientific research and all that it is that make our country great and competitive. I don't paint them all with the same brush, and I certainly don't paint the speaker with that brush, but enough of them in their caucus to shut down government. That would be a victory for them.
We'll fight them anywhere, any way. They are legislative arsonists. EJ, there's a lot of detail that's really important this week, and it's going to carry on into the debt limit, the potential default situation almost right after this ends. But set the big frame for us. What do you see being played out in this super fisticuffs over Obamacare, EJ?
Well, I first want to pick up on a point that Amy made, which I think is very important. The overwhelming majority of Democrats and quietly a few Republicans think the sequester itself is very bad policy, first because it cuts government in utterly random ways. It doesn't make careful cuts or shift money around.
Yeah.
Secondly, it cuts government spending at a moment when the economy still needs a boost. And so in some ways, this whole Obamacare debate is a distraction. For now, Republicans do not have majorities to repeal a law. Generally, what you do in that situation is you fight the law in elections, try to get a majority, and then if the people really want to repeal it, you win the election and cut it. And so what we should be arguing about is the budget. I think the big picture here is in large part about the Republican Party. On the one hand, as Amy said, they've really gained a lot from their point of view with these spending cuts, yet they don't want to admit it because 40 to 80 Republicans in the House caucus, and I'm curious how Bob counts that number on the right end, the Tea Party folks, have the power, at least temporarily, to intimidate the majority. And I think the reason for that is that an awful lot of Republicans, when they say, my constituents demand this, what they're talking about are their Republican constituents, particularly their constituents in Republican primaries. And
sure,
a lot of Republicans in the House don't want to have primaries, even if they think they can win them against Tea Party candidates. They're a distraction. They require a lot of spending. And Speaker Boehner is walking this careful line where he doesn't seem to like any of this at all. But he is worried about how that rump, large but still a minority of his caucus, could upend his leadership. So that the whole political situation now is really being driven by internal politics inside the Republican Party.
Bob Costa, open up those internal politics. Maybe we could start with Ted Cruz, because he pushed things very hard over the summer here. There he is in the Senate. He clearly had a hallelujah chorus feeding back and forth in the House. Start with Ted Cruz. What's he pushing for? Describe the politics of Ted Cruz here as he has made this big noise on Obamacare.
To understand what Cruz is doing here, you have to go back to May, and I reported back in May that Cruz's confidants, his law school friends, his family, others, knew that behind the scenes he was very much planning ahead just months into his first term in the Senate for a 2016 presidential run. And I was with him in Iowa in August this summer as he campaigned there for the first time, met with evangelical pastors, and really sounded like a presidential contender. And so Cruz has really been trying to win over the right, win over that rump that EJ mentioned, that's out there in the Republican base. And so he never really had a plan to really follow through with the defund strategy. I actually spoke with Senator Cruz 3 days ago, and he mentioned that it was never really his plan to see this happen. What he was looking for more was to pressure the leadership to make a statement, to try to just push it to the brink, to fight to the 11th hour. And he never really even expected the Senate to have the votes. But, of course, this has made a lot of Republicans, as EJ mentioned and Amy mentioned, in the House frustrated, because if he never thought he would have to whip votes or corral votes in the Senate behind his own effort, then what's the whole point?
The Wall Street Journal going after him today, saying the supposedly intrepid General Cruz can view the battle from the comfort of HQ while the enlisted troops take any casualties. The Wall Street Journal pretty tough on him today.
And who was also very tough on him? His own colleagues. I was outside the Senate lunch on Tuesday at the Capitol, and when you go on deep background with some of these Republican senators, they scowl when I mention Cruz, and they say they can't believe, after decades in the Senate, some of these members, that at these Senate lunches, he never speaks up about trying to get votes behind the defund effort. He's not trying to whip people in the cloakroom. It's all a public PR campaign.
But your own colleague, boss, I guess, Rich Lowry at National Review, he had been skeptical about this as a conservative himself earlier, but he was writing just yesterday that his view has shifted. He says, I do think it's possible Republicans could get something out of this fight if they play their cards shrewdly, and that means stick together. What can still be won here by Republicans? What's your colleague Rich Lowry pointing to there, Bob?
I respectfully disagree with my colleague Rich. I'm not so sure what Republicans can win in a shutdown fight. When you talk to members of Boehner's inner circle, he was part of the Gingrich Wars in the 90s. He knows that shutdown politics do not play well. And what Republicans and conservatives, and what Lowry's alluding to, is some hope that maybe you can defund aspects of the Obamacare, or you can defund provisions of the president's health care law, maybe you delay aspects of the law. But that's really, the president only made concessions on the debt limit in 2011, and that was after the Republicans swept the House in 2010. It's a different political climate now. The president, I think, has the upper hand now strategically that he did not have perhaps in the 2011 fiscal fight. And Republicans expecting to win something here, especially as they can't even unite in either chamber, I think maybe a misreading of the situation.
I mean, we heard some kind of amazing tape on that just this morning on NPR's Morning Edition. These were Republicans being critical of Senator Ted Cruz. Now you hear Michael Grimm here of New York, Peter King of New York, Sean Duffy of Wisconsin, from interviews with MSNBC and CNN. Here's the three.
Ted Cruz and others like him have been writing checks with their mouth that their votes can't cash.
Their influence. We as House Republicans should stop letting Ted Cruz set our agenda for us. He should stay in the Senate. He should keep quiet. If he can do it,
what I see happening now is people coming out and calling them out for the hypocrisy of these big, tough conservatives who know how to fight, but will never get in the ring.
Okay, Amy Walter, explain for us. So there are Republican voices saying, cut it out, Ted Cruz. But clearly, they don't represent everybody in the House. You've got this tough Tea Party dug in rump, Bob calls it, that seems to be ready to, you know, fight to the last inch on Obamacare.
Well, I was actually sending emails out this morning to folks who've worked in Washington for 20, 30 years or more and said, in your experience here, has any member of the Senate who is so young, right, Ted Cruz just got here, been able to alienate both friends and foes as quickly as Ted Cruz? And the only names I could come up with were, Aaron Burr and maybe Joe McCarthy. So this is somebody who really has, in a very short amount of time, been able to really turn off many many folks.
But
even
wait
in
a minute, he's not a fool. Whatever Ted Cruz
no,
is,
no, and it's Bob's to Bob's point, and I think this is exactly what this is about. This is about Ted Cruz. This is about Ted Cruz positioning himself for whatever he wants to go next. Look, even when you ask Republicans in the most recent polling we've seen about a shutdown, the majority of Republicans aren't so crazy about this idea of a government shutdown. But when you take Republicans and you split them into Republicans and Tea Party Republicans, mm-hmm. overwhelmingly Tea Party Republicans saying, yeah, no compromise, let's go full force. What's happening, as you can see in this conference, is it's true, it's a small group, but when you only have a 17-seat majority, a small group can mm-hmm. stymie any ability to get a majority, who are in concert with Ted Cruz. But I think the bigger issue here is, one, Cruz's own ambitions. And the other is, when Republicans are talking now, because of the way we have these districts set up, thanks in part to redistricting, thanks to the way that people now live in like-minded communities, they're talking to people who agree with them. And they're not talking to anyone. Even when they go home and they do town hall meetings or they meet with constituents, they're meeting with the same folks who are encouraging them to do this. So we talk here about, well, gosh, this doesn't seem rational. You talk to strategists who are looking at polls. They say this isn't going to work. But when they go and meet their constituents look like, talk like, act like them, because these are incredibly safe seats designed to keep the Republicans in the majority.
So Bob Costa, maybe this is Ted Cruz crazy like a fox. Maybe this is exactly the way to win a presidential primary in today's GOP, Bob.
Oh, I think he is crazy like a fox in that sense. I think it's, if you're trying to win the Iowa caucuses or the South Carolina primary in 2016, this is the kind of politics that resonates with those voters right now. I think the Republican Party, as much as the RNC had its post-election autopsy and you hear talk about moderation, I think the party is actually so fed up with this assumption that moderates have been losing as the nominee from McCain to Dole to Romney, that they actually want to move further to the right in the coming months and years. And I think that's really the tale I always hear as someone who's covering the conservative movement in the GOP. It's the move farther to the right that's really the story right now, not any kind of strategic strategy on Capitol Hill.
So, EJ, maybe this isn't just silliness on Capitol Hill at all. Maybe this is our country speaking.
You know, I think, Robert, it's not our country. It's a wing of the Republican Party. And I think that this discussion gets completely distorted if we say this is all about polarization in general. No, it's not about polarization in general. It's about the rise of an extremely conservative form of conservatism that I would argue isn't really authentic conservatism. I think Robert's absolutely right in saying this could be a good strategy for Ted Cruz. Heck, we're talking about him a lot, which is something that's pretty good for a young senator. But I'm reminded from what Robert said of one of my favorite bumper stickers that I saw in New Hampshire in 1988. And it said, it had a little mushroom cloud in the corner, and it said, Al Haig for president, let's get it over with. And I think that what's going on here is you may have to have in the Republican Party the nomination of a really, really a right-of-center candidate, have that candidate lose, and I do think such a candidate would lose, and then it will be possible again for Republicans to say, all right, maybe it's time for a more moderate brand of conservatism. I just want to quote one of the legendary congressional reporters, David Rogers, who now writes for Politico. Just a couple of lines from a piece he wrote today, this morning, at least I saw it this morning. The biggest change in Congress these days may be just how many lawmakers who got to Washington by getting more votes than anyone else don't think the same rules apply to them here. Position taking is all the rage in Washington. Having any real effect is secondary. And I think that really summarizes this Obamacare fight.
Let's get to our callers, and I want to bring that back to you, Bob and Amy, as well. Paul in St. Louis, Missouri. Paul, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Okay. What do you see, Paul?
Well, I think that you correctly point out that what, you know, Tom Cruise is doing, playing chicken with the economy, is irresponsible. But it seems to me that it gets lost a little bit in the debate that Congress is the, you know, that's the funding vehicle for the government. They're supposed to pay for things. It's within their power not to pay for things, too, isn't it?
Yes, of course. I mean, they don't have to pay for anything. On the other hand, this is legislation that passed this institution.
I know, but even if it's passed, they don't have to pay for it. I don't think that's, I mean, it seems to me that conversation assumes that's the case.
Yeah,
I think that that's within their power too. But
yeah, you're quite right about that. We'll pick it up, Amy. What about it? You know, hey, people are saying this is irresponsible, but the power of the purse lies right there, and you can always change your mind. Is this with precedent? Without precedent? Is this when Nancy Pelosi calls it legislative arson? Is that over the top, or does history suggest she's right that it's in an extraordinary category?
Well, you know, I'm going to leave this also to legal scholars and folks who've studied the body more closely than I. But look, there are many different ways to fund the government. You can put it into this. The reason that we're talking about this government shutdown is because of the fact that regular order hasn't been happening. Normally you say, OK, here's a bill to fund defense. Here's a bill to fund this part of what government spends money on, right? You go through all these different categories.
Yep.
You do that one at a time, and that's how you fund the government. Well, now, right, you can't pass any of those. And look, when the government shut down back in the 95-96 era, they had passed appropriation bills for many pieces of government. It was just a couple that were holdouts, and the whole government shut down over that. So, yes, you can definitely send this in a piecemeal way, but they can't even get that part done. So that's how we ended up where we are. And can you say, yep, we don't want to fund the government. We don't like the fact that we're still spending too much. Sure, but that's not what the argument is about right now, right? That's why we talked about the debt ceiling. This is not a fight about funding the government. This right now is a fight about funding Obamacare, which, by the way, shutting down the government is going to do nothing to defund Obamacare. Shut the government down and the Obamacare is going to keep on.
Is it going to be the same fight starting next month when we get into the default question? Is Obamacare going to be at the heart of that one too, Amy?
It absolutely is. And so the question now is, do you make this more tactical, right? You go after this and say, okay, instead of going for this whole defund thing, why don't we focus on pieces of it that we know can get Democratic support? What about if we delay the individual mandate for a year, just as the employer mandate's been delayed for a year? Mm-hmm. What if we say, you know what, these taxes within Obamacare on things like medical devices, hey, let's take that piece out, see how many Democratic votes we can get for that. That is making an impact on the law much more so than a defund strategy, which is never going to work.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the TikTok politics of the shutdown threat right now in Washington. So much on the line there with 1 week to go. We're looking at what's driving all this drama with E.J. Dionne, Washington Post, Amy Walter, The Cook Political Report, Robert Costa with National Review. Online, here Skeeter says, Ted Cruz and other hardline Tea Publicans in the House and Senate are living in a fantasy world. Okay, there's a view. Penny says, the job of the House is not to shut down the government. On the other hand, here's James says, looking at Congress, they're worse than useless, hence the debt and economic destruction of the country, industry, and small business. He's ready for less government, not more. Rachel says our government is useless. Sounds like she wouldn't mind if it were shut down. And that view is out there as well. Aaron in Omaha, Nebraska. Aaron, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I think one of your guests earlier was talking about how when these Republican representatives go back to their home districts, they're seeing that their home gerrymandered districts are a lot like them, are the Tea Party types. However, what I feel like we are seeing, certainly here in Nebraska, mm-hmm. I believe you're seeing it up in Wisconsin as well, is you are seeing Republicans going home to an echo chamber where they seem to be almost willfully fooling themselves. When they go back to their districts, if they have listening sessions at all, many of them do not any longer, Paul Ryan is a perfect example of this, they make sure to have their regional Republican parties pack the House with Tea Partiers, not just regular voters. And then when someone does get through and disagrees or challenges the Republicans on their stances, mm-hmm. the others in the room boo them down, they trip them, they shout them down. This was all on the Internet recently. And so I think what the Republicans are doing is they're just simply putting themselves in an echo chamber, and sooner or later that's going to come back to bite them.
What do you say? Thank you, Aaron, in Omaha. Bob Costa, how about it? I mean, that sounds really engineered, but you've written describing districts that are quite tightly put together so that, in fact, they don't have to subdivide and just bring in a subset. They can kind of listen to the district, and that's what it is. But I don't know, maybe not. What do you say to Aaron's observation, Bob?
I think he brings up a very good point in the sense that on both the right and the left, this idea of a teletown hall being sufficient for a member of Congress or a senator to communicate with constituents has actually caught on in Congress, and I think it's a disturbing trend.
You mean not just really an open door, come one and all, but somehow an engineered audience? Is that what that
exactly
means?
And it's all phone, and there's no human touch to the presentation. And I think that's really because the members of both parties are fear that on the left there may be union activists or this kind of thing. That's the Republican fear, and then on the left there's also fear that there's a Tea Party AstroTurf element that's going to come out and try to put them on YouTube or something like that.
But what about this notion, you know, Aaron says, well, they're living in a fantasy world. I assume you'll hear that same kind of thing if you go to a Tea Party rally, that Nancy Pelosi's living in a fantasy world.
But, you know, I'm sorry?
It's true that you'll hear that, Bob? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, I didn't mean to interrupt. I just say that's exactly right. I think too many Republicans now are not going to these high school auditoriums in their own districts and listening to 300 constituents from a broad range of views, and they're just listening to talk radio and the Internet and the blogs, and they're being egged on, even if maybe their districts aren't entirely behind the strategy.
EJ, it's dispiriting when you get these calls, you know, you're in a fantasy world, no, you're in a fantasy world, and pretty soon people throw up their hands.
Right, but that's, again, I think that's false equivalence, because if you look at the polling, it's very clear that Obamacare in the abstract is unpopular. It's about 10 points more unpopular than popular, but a chunk of the opposition comes from people who actually wish it were more progressive. Then if you ask Americans, especially independents, should the government be shut down? Is it worth it to do this, to repeal Obamacare? That position gets 15 or 20% support. So this Tea Party position is a very tiny minority. And I want to go back to an important caller earlier.
Yes.
He asked, isn't Congress free to defund Obamacare?
Is it all fair
game? He's absolutely right. I'm sorry?
Is it all fair game, sort of?
Yes. And sure, if the Republicans in our free elections had won the White House, the Senate, and the House, they could vote to repeal or defund Obamacare. But they only won one House of Congress, and even there with gerrymandered districts. Nonetheless, all right, they control one House of Congress. There's a precedent here. Nancy Pelosi wanted to defund the Iraq War. When that failed, she didn't say, I'm not going to vote for the debt ceiling. We're going to block all of that. We're not going to have a budget. She said, all right, we're going to keep fighting, move on to the next election, and then let's, in the meantime, govern. What you have here is a minority saying, and in some ways it's a minority of the Republicans in the House saying, if we don't get our way, we'll shut down the government or we'll risk default on the debt ceiling. That is not how we can govern ourselves in a democratic republic that has separated powers. You have to agree that when you lose a fight, you move on until you can win the next election. And so this is really, as I keep saying, a very radical stance that is not the normal way to govern ourselves.
Amy Walter, does John Boehner articulate that to his fellow members, his Tea Party members in the House? And if he does he say, boys and gals, this ain't the way we do it? If he says that, what do they say in response?
Well, I'm a parent of a six-year-old, and so I'm a big – I understand incentives and consequence very well now. And you know what works really well is when you actually have a carrot or a stick, and Boehner has neither, right? There's absolutely no reason that these men and women have to listen to him. They have no fear of losing their districts. In fact, their only fear is losing from the right. And there's nothing that Boehner can give them to make them actually like him
more. You mean
like
earmarks in the old days?
Like earmarks or anything like that, right?
A new bridge.
But I want to pick up on EJ's point, which I think is really important here when we talk about the funding the Obamacare fight, which is what we're seeing right now with especially if we move into the debt ceiling fight, we're already starting to see some eroding in consumer confidence, right? The feeling among America, this is the same erosion we saw in the last debt ceiling fight. And what happens then, if indeed Obamacare, it rolls out and it's not good, people are unhappy, there really is economic consequence to this. The bad news if you're a Republican is if indeed Obamacare is having the intended effects that they say it's going to have.
You mean intended good effects?
I'm sorry, the bad effects that Republicans are saying it's going to unintended.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Okay. Yes, the consequences, terrible impact on the economy. Are voters going to blame that on Obamacare, or are they going to turn and say, "Boy, the reason that our economy is struggling right now is the fact that we A, shut down the government, B, we had this debt ceiling fight, C, maybe we defaulted on our debt," right?
Yeah.
If Republicans were as committed to the idea that this Obamacare is as devastating to the economy and to the American psyche and everything else, let it actually be implemented and then let voters make that conclusion themselves.
But Bob Costa, I've read you quoting Ted Cruz all over the place saying, you know, this is it. This is the battle. We can't let this go into effect. I mean, they don't want to test it by rolling it out, Bob.
No, I mean, and that's really the division between the leadership and the Cruz caucus, in the sense that the leadership believes they can make a good fight in 2014 on the implementation of Obamacare, as Amy was discussing, how the implementation will be flawed and that they can run on those flaws and highlight them ahead of the 2014 midterms. But Cruz and many Tea Partiers fear that once October 1st hits, people are going to start to like Obamacare, and in fact, they view it as almost a welfare/entitlement program. It's going to almost settle in, and that's the rising fear on the right.
EJ,
and that's exactly right. And I think that Republicans aren't primarily afraid that Obamacare won't work. They're primarily afraid that it will work. And Ted Cruz has been, in a kind of backhanded way, quite candid about this when he says that the American people will get hooked on Obamacare, his word, as they are on Medicare or Social Security. Well, those programs hook people because they work. And I think that's an underlying message, sort of a subtle message the Republicans are sending that is not particularly in their interest.
Though Amy raises the possibility that it could have some rough consequences, too, as it's implemented. Claire in Madison, Wisconsin. Claire, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I think my question was just answered. I am just so sick of all this drama. As a taxpayer, I'm fed up with these people. And the Republicans insist on beating this drum of killing Obamacare. How many times? 42 times. It's not going to happen. And why don't they just get to work on all the other things they should be doing instead of beating this drum over and over and over?
Let's take it back to first kind of objections then. Bob Costa, can you articulate from the Tea Party side, what is it exactly that they don't want to see in Obamacare, which, of course, has been pointed out had a lot of similarities to Romney Care. The Heritage Foundation put forward similar things back in the day. But here we are. It's 2013. And what is it at bottom that this caucus doesn't want?
It's the idea of a mandate for health insurance. I mean, beyond that, I think detailed understanding of the law is pretty limited. But it's this idea that the federal government is becoming a massive bureaucracy, and Obamacare is the keystone to that, and that's really the driving element.
EJ, how do you interpret the sort of bottom line objection here?
Well, I do think that there is Chris Van Hollen, the Democrat from my congressman, actually said there's a kind of fetish on the right with Obamacare. And I think it has been raised to a symbolic level far beyond the actual content of the law, because you're quite right. This is like the Massachusetts plans that came out of the Heritage Foundation's ideas and supported by Mitt Romney. I think there is on the right this absolutely generalized dislike of the federal government and a belief that it's gone too big. And I'd also point out that what you're seeing on the Republican side is the programs they're targeting are primarily programs for lower income Americans. The Farm Bill is a good example where they didn't really take a lot out. And indeed, in the final bill, they actually added some of the subsidy for well-off and corporate farmers. And then they slashed food stamps. And a conservative friend of mine said recently, you know, if we wanted to send the right message, we'd cut the corporate side first before we cut needy people. So there's a whole combination of arguments here. One is a generalized anti-big government argument. I think Bob is exactly right about that. But it looks all the time like the parts of big government that are being attacked, including Obamacare, are the parts that are giving benefits to moderate and lower income Americans.
Let's go to Jeff in Prattville, Alabama. Jeff, thanks for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I really feel that Congress is completely out of touch with the average American. We've lost thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of jobs, and people have lost wages and benefits. And COBRA is not the answer. I also think that Congress should be affected by the laws that they pass.
Out of touch with exactly the kind of issues that EJ's talking about there. Jeff, I appreciate your call. I mean, Amy, you know, There is an elaborate argument made. You can hear it any day of the week in lots of quarters in the media about the problems with Obamacare. Sort of, you know, bullet point after bullet point after bullet point. If you turn into conservative media, is it so clear that Republicans are going to wake up and say, "Oh, we were wrong to oppose that," or does this become the bedrock of the next round of elections in this country?
Well, this is what happens when you are the party out of the White House, especially the party out of the White House for 8 years. There's no leadership. It becomes very difficult to keep focused on anything other than trying to get the person who is in power out of power. And as we've pointed out throughout this discussion today, you know, the Republican Party is having a very big internal fight between the Tea Party elements and the more, quote, establishment elements of the party. So that's a very big piece of this. And what's happening then is they've been so focused on things that they're against, the party has yet to come up with the things that they are for. And again, I think that's very hard for any party out of power to do that. This is going to be the thing in 2016 that the Republican candidate for president is going to need to present that. And to the caller's point, which I think is a very good one, is the most important thing Republicans can do in the 2016 election is to answer that question. How are you looking out for the middle class, a middle class that we have seen is living on stagnant wages, a middle class that is not growing, a middle class that feels like it's falling further and further behind? That is the argument that the Obama campaign made in 2012, and it's the question that Mitt Romney couldn't answer. It's going to be the question that the Republican candidate's going to have to answer. That candidate's not going to be John Boehner. Ted Cruz would like it to be him. I don't think it's going to be Ted Cruz. So who is it going to be on the Republican side who can make that case? And you can't do it from Congress. You got to do it as the presidential nominee.
One more call here. Britton in Charleston, South Carolina. Britton, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yeah, I think to EJ's point, you know, that he was saying, you know, he fears, or Republicans fear that, you know, Obamacare is going to be successful. And I don't think that it's the case that Republicans fear that it's going to be successful in the sense of it being a beneficial program. You know, it's obvious that they fear the success of Obamacare because it is a program like Medicare and Medicaid that, you know, people become dependent on. And as we've seen, especially in this administration, these people aren't getting off these programs. And so it's a fundamental difference in the role of our government. Just like Bob was saying, you know, the Tea Party candidates don't want to see this come through. They don't want to see it be put into place because it's not going to be able to be retracted. You know, the damage is going to be done. And so it's not that we don't want it to be successful in that sense. It's just a fundamental difference in the role of government altogether. We don't want more people dependent on these programs.
Britain, we've got it. Bob Costa, is that a fair representation of what the Tea Party representatives are hearing when they go home?
I think that's very true. I think the Tea Party members of both the House and the Senate, it's not so much what they're hearing back home, but it's who they're hearing from back home. It's not a broad consensus, I think, in a lot of these states and districts. But because of the way politics works on the right and the way talk radio and conservative outlets drive the conversation, this defund thing has just really snowballed into something that they can't ignore. And you even have the speakers, the leaders of both chambers, almost kowtowing to a strategy and a rump that they disagree with. But they have to almost placate and make sure they urge along or at least go through the motions to act like they're acknowledging it.
Well, we may be hearing a version of this debate, sort of crisis tone all over again on the default debt limit front very soon. Within 1 week, we'll know on the budget front and the defunding question, the shutdown question. I want to thank all three of you for being with us this hour. Just great to have you. E.J. Dionne, a columnist at the Washington Post. E.J., thank you very much for your time and insights today.
Good to be with you.
Amy Walter at the Cook Political Report. Amy, thanks so much for joining us.
Sure, had a great time.
And Bob Costa at National Review. Thank you, Bob, in South Bend. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point